Hi, this is Daniel Emerson of Stonewall Cider, located in County Cork in Ireland, and you are listening to Cider Chat.
Hello and welcome to Cider Chat. My name is Rhea Wincoller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, cider enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. This week, we're talking Ireland, both the association that is for producers in Ireland called Cider Ireland, and a bit about Stonewall Cider with Daniel Emerson, who I met back in 2016 at the International Hall of Gala Apples. I'll talk more about that shortly, but first, a wee bit of news out and about in Ciderville. This episode of Cider Chat, which is number 210, is going live a little bit early this week because I am at the 10th annual American Cider Association annual trade conference called CiderCon, and it's being held in Oakland, California. And as such, the special guests at CiderCon are Irish cider makers. So I thought this is absolutely perfect timing to release this episode a little bit early for those folks who are coming into Oakland this week. And for those of you who aren't attending CiderCon, at least you'll get an idea of what's going to be taking place at CiderCon. Speaking of which, just last week, I released episode 209, which is CiderCon Insider Tips. And that is for folks both going to Oakland for CiderCon, but it has a lot of info of going to California, transportation pieces, some bonus tips there. I think it's pretty informative, so I really recommend listening to that. And if you are heading to CiderCon now, you might want to start downloading some episodes for your ride home in case you've just found out about Cider Chat at this point. You know, download it so you can listen to it on your plane ride home or your long drives. All right, when I come back, I'm going to fill you in on a little bit of detail that's happening right after CiderCon 2020. Ba-dum-ba-dum. Usually I look at the fall as like the busy time for cider because I'm trying to get the podcast out and I'm also trying to make my own cider and I'm scrumping apples wherever I can and it's hot out and my truck breaks down and yada, yada, yada. Well, that's a little bit what my first winter of 2020 here is like so far. It's all good because, you know, it's all around cider and certainly I'm stoked to be in California as you are listening to this podcast right now and probably on the other side of my kvetch, but I'm going to kvetch nonetheless because, well, you know, my podcast, my rules. I'm at CiderCon this week. It's going to be a flurry of activity. Good stuff. I know that. And then I'll be going home. I'll be home for a week and then I turn around and I head in the opposite direction to the east, flying out to France, where I'll be attending Cider Expo. And that is a whole different scene from CiderCon USA to Cider Expo France. One is that CiderCon is in its 10th year and has an executive director leading that. And Cider Expo is brand new. This is like the first time they're ever doing it. So it feels a little bit like the beginning of Franklin County Cider Days way back when. Folks kind of scrambling together and just like a flurry of activity. So I'm feeling super privileged to have the opportunity to be able to go to Normandy and attend the Cider Expo, which is taking place over the 13th, 14th, and 15th of February. And here's some of the programs that I'm particularly looking at. One is on aroma and quality. I thought that would be very interesting. That's a technique one. And then another one is on bacteria, and another talk is on sommeliers of cider. Now, the U.S. association, the American Cider Association, I almost went back to their old name, United States Association of Cider Makers, is no more. It's now the American Cider Association, has a certified Pommelier program. In fact, I even think they trademarked that name, which is interesting. I don't think they were able to trademark Pommelier. I think the first person I ever saw wearing that was Eleanor Leger Pommelier, but I could be wrong. Maybe they didn't trademark that. Because they're trying to really tighten up the ship and get folks have a certain kind of quality and certification program to be pouring cider, which is a good move because we have some really high quality ciders, and that's the direction we're going in, much like wine, which has sommeliers. So here in France, they're taking that title, sommelier of ciders. And I'm very curious about what is going to be talked about there. Two women are going to be talking about that. One is Jane, who's a pommelier in the UK. And I think there's another person, Jordan, who just opened the cider bar in Brussels. I think he is on that panel now too. And then Camille, who was like an expat kind of scene from France living in the UK. And she's with Calci Ciders, I'm probably not pronouncing that right. So I'm just curious, what is that about? And then the other workshop is going to be on cider and terroir. So there's actually 2 days of presentations, and then the last day is open to the public for tasting. But it doesn't really say that on the schedule, so it's a little confusing to me, and there's going to be also cocktails being poured and made. Should be very, very interesting, and I'm hoping to record some of those pieces. And if you've been listening, you know, straight on through all the past episodes, you also know that I'm going to be meeting a group of Russian cider makers that I'm very excited about, that Maxim, who is Russian, has kind of hooked me up with, and we're going to be having a sit-down chat. So that takes place in Normandy, kind of grouping a bit. And then I'm staying on in France for a little bit of downtime in Paris to do some research there to help guests who go on the Totally Cider tours to Normandy, France, to help them get landed, to check out some of the sites so I could better talk about it. And then I'll be heading down to Brittany and doing some more cider research down there too, of locations and meeting makers. And I know that all sounds like, damn girl, you like really lead the most magnificent life. But on the flip side, I have to come home a week later and then go into a totally different world teaching my conflict management course to 25 new folks who want to get certified. I guess they found my book. I wrote a book on the topic. You know, it's interesting. I don't call myself a cider expert, and I see a lot of people calling themselves cider expert who are, have been in the, I don't know, I'm kind of like a black belt philosophy. It takes at least 10,000 hours to be involved in one topic before you could even like start making towards a certain level of accreditation. And I've been involved in cider for 25 years. I don't call myself a cider expert, but I suppose in conflict management I am, because I certainly have my 10,000 hours there plus. It's many, many years of that. And I'm going to have to switch gears, head to Boston, and do a training. Whew, I'm just dizzy on all that. Excited, but a little bit dizzy. So in the meanwhile, I'm releasing this episode this week. I have another episode queued up for the following week before I go to France. And then while I'm in France, I'm going to just be winging it. And I think I'll be putting out some Cider Chat Live episodes. And I'll probably be posting that on my regular feed for Cider Chat. But also, if you have subscribed to Cider Chat Live via the Anchor app or on Apple Podcasts, you'll get it there too. And so it might be a little demi-tasse of the scene of what I'm experiencing in France. Or I might take it the other side. I might just roll out some of the presentations I recorded at CiderCon here. This is the quandary of being a cider podcaster. I appreciate you kind of listening to me, because it's a lot. And how do I pay for this? And the only way I really get to do that and to kind of keep Cider Chat alive is by asking you, dear Ciderville, to support this podcast. And there's a couple options to do that. One is via the Cider Chat Patreon page. You can find a link in the show notes to that and also to PayPal, where you can make a donation there. Cider Chat is really, as far as I'm concerned, one of the most wide-ranging cider news weekly going out in the world. And it takes a whole bunch of apples to create an orchard. And this apple here needs you out there. So, all right, I'm going to take a pause here. And then we're going to be going right into my conversation with Daniel Emerson. I'll do a little bit of an intro here to tell you about my original meetup with Daniel. And then we'll get right into that.
Walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
I first met Daniel Emerson of Stonewell Cider back in 2016. I was in Asturias for the International Hall of Gala Apples, and I was driving to the first location of the day for the program. I kind of like bopping along. The highways there are pretty quiet. And all of a sudden, I saw this vehicle go whipping by me. I thought it was a Land Rover, but he then corrected me that it was known as a Defender. And I thought, I bet he's going to, or she, I didn't know at the time it was Daniel, going to the same location that I am. It must be a cider maker. And indeed it was. It was Daniel Emerson. And we had just a fantastic time in Asturias. And since then, I've always wanted to have a sit-down chat with him. So when I met up with him in an elevator in Chicago during CiderCon 2019, it was actually late in the night. He was just saying bye to Paul Vanderhyde, and I was coming down from a party, and there was Daniel, and I had a little Calvados in my pocket, and I said, "You want a swig?" And of course, he took it because he's a good Irishman. And we set plans to have a sit-down chat. So this was pre-recorded at CiderCon 2019 in hopes of being able to put it out for this year, 2020, knowing that the Irish makers were going to be in Oakland. So we're going to go right into that chat now. And Daniel is going to be beginning this conversation talking about how he got involved creating the brand Stonewall Cider.
I had come up with the idea because at the time there was only industrial brands available. Mm-hmm. And yet Ireland was consuming more cider per capita than any other country in the world. And having lived in the UK and France, I knew that you could make good cider, which was sweet, sugary syrup. And that's really what kicked the idea off. So we started off with what I would classify as classic craft cider 101. So something that was approachable, wasn't going to scare away the consumer. All they'd ever known was a clear, highly carbonated sweet product. So I couldn't distance myself too far from that, or they would never have had the confidence to jump into it. But that was, what, best part of 10 years ago. And since then, both the market and the consumer has changed. So that classic cider 101, our medium dry style, still sells probably about 70% of our volume within the domestic market. But now we've got a dry version, which would be about another 25%. And then we have loads of seasonals and specialties. So there has been a transition. I'd like to think it's because we've partially helped educating the consumer, but I wouldn't be too sure about that. And since then, we've grown. I mean, we started the first year, we did 3,000 litres. Last year, we would have sold just shy of about 500,000 litres. So we've gone through some fairly steep growth over that 10-year period. We've started to plateau, and I'm trying to look at the next way to take off to the next level. But it's been one hell of a ride, not a moment of boredom, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. What is your role? Are you the head cider maker, GM, CEO, chief bottle washer?
That's a good question. All of the above and more, I would say, is probably sure. The honest answer. Yeah. I probably spend most of my time in reality focusing on sales and general management. I am highly involved in the new product development side of things. But if you like the day-to-day management of the production, I wouldn't be involved with. What I try to do is set up a fairly standardized set of procedures so that it's not making cider by numbers, but it certainly isn't. Doesn't require a great deal of, let's say, scientific skill to do it for the individuals to actually undertake it. And so we are only 4.5 people, I describe us in number. We would then take on seasonal staff during the pressing season, the primary pressing season, the bittersweet cider apples between mid-October and mid-November. So we might boost that number by another 8 to 10 people just processing those apples. But keep the headcount low. I'm always one of those individuals who is concerned about what might be coming around the corner. So I try and keep as tight a control on costs as possible. But no, I would touch all aspects of the business, but generally it would be sales and working with our distributors, working with our overseas distributors, and trying to keep the show on the road.
Mm-hmm. How'd you get into cider? Were you always a cider drinker? Is that part of your heritage, your family?
Well, I don't know. That's an interesting question. I mean, I my wife calls it a midlife crisis, which has been going on for 10 years now, and she's part of it. But no, it was...
Well, let's make sure that she's not the crisis.
No, she's definitely
not the crisis. We just
want to clarify that. No, she's not the crisis.
Okay,
not at all.
She's
participating in my midlife crisis,
okay,
you could say it that way.
Okay.
She keeps control of the purse strings. So, I moved back to Ireland with my wife in 2007, which some people may be aware was a most appalling economic time, certainly in the Republic of Ireland. We started a massive hangover after a huge credit binge of about 15, 16 years. And so basically the economy shut down. And I was going over there not only to move back to the family home, but also to work there. And so what I ended up on doing, unfortunately, was leaving at 7 o'clock on a Monday morning on the red-eye flight and coming back at midnight on Friday. And that wasn't very good with the young family.
Mm-hmm.
And the way I fell into cider is I was always looking for something that would justify me being able to work at home and finance a young family and all the rest of it. And it was during the time that my son Colin was born, I took some time off, and that's when I realized that the per capita consumption in Ireland was so high. And that's really when the light bulb moment occurred for me. And my father-in-law, who was a winemaker, found me an old apple press and an apple scratcher in France and brought it back. And we have a small orchard on the farm. We started pressing apples there, and one thing led to another. I mean, my first batch was truly undrinkable, apart from me and the local rugby team who wanted free alcohol. But having gone away and got retrained, it went from there. And that's how the ball started, really. And
what were you doing beforehand?
I was in a completely separate field. So I originally started out in print, digital media. I then got involved with some of the online aggregation technologies that were being created for execution of marketing and media campaigns. So varied, but nothing to do with alcohol. The only thing with alcohol before was consumption.
But it's a key piece. But it's a key piece in terms of having a business and knowing marketing and media. Were you able to integrate some of those skills into your business model? And if you don't let people know about your cider,
undoubtedly the business experience that I obtained over the preceding, let's say, 20 years of my working life was invaluable. And I think you can see that across a lot of the micro alcohol production sectors. Mm-hmm. And you see the individuals who come from diverse backgrounds deploying a lot of the skills and the experience they've had. A very good micro brewer near us in County Cork, 8 Degrees, the founders, one was an accountant and the other was a quantity surveyor. And they both enjoyed making beer, and it went from there. But obviously they brought tremendous skills. So yes, I mean, even the first bottle design, the label design that we have, that we still maintain because it's very strong, it's very powerful, the Celtic knot, that was actually me sitting down with a whole lot of designers that I would have been working with on a regular basis, giving them a brief, telling them what I wanted to achieve, what I wanted the brand to represent. And because they knew I was starting the business, it only cost me a few cases of cider, which was great.
No, not bad. How do you explain cider to Irish drinkers? Because there is much larger Irish companies, right? Magners would be one. And, they have the campaign of, putting ice in cider. And then you come out with a different style of cider. I don't suppose you recommend putting ice in your cider, do you? Ice cubes?
Certainly not.
No, right. So, you have that educational piece there. Do I'm just kind of getting trying to get a sense of, like, in the U.S., makers here are still having that education of people coming in. And I heard about cider. I want to try it. What really is it? And do you have, like, a short answer for that? Or do you even need to do that? Train the sales reps going out on how to explain that?
Oh, no, you do. Absolutely. Because we would be going out at a price point substantially higher than any of the industrial brands. So there needs to be an explanation in regards to that. Yeah. So there is a sort of evangelizing aspect to going out there and educating the consumer, because yes, mm-hmm. they all believe they know what cider is, but their reference mark is a large industrial sweet one. Mm-hmm. And when you're giving them something that is slightly more demanding or slightly more enriching from a flavor profile, they definitely need explanation. So there is a lot to it. And it's very hard work. It's exceedingly mm-hmm. hard work. I mean, the best way to do it is actually to do side-by-side tasting with an industrial cider. And then you will always win. But interestingly enough, Magners is known as Bulmers in Ireland, which is complex because there's another Bulmers outside of Ireland, but it's known as Bulmers, and a traditional die-hard Bulmers drinker in the Republic of Ireland will not normally switch to a new cider. What we're actually winning over are people who wouldn't normally drink cider, and who would have tried the large ones and found them too sweet for their mm-hmm. for their liking, and it's introducing them to actually ciders that are much more drinkable, less cloying, and something that they're going to drink in a social environment. But there is a lot of education, and one of the challenges that I have with some of the more specialist ciders that we do, like still ciders, or I do a cider port and things like that, the moment you mention cider, the preconception is already put in their head. So it's a two-edged sword. They're familiar with the category, but then they have a very predetermined notion of what it represents. So what I try and do, we have about 6 or 7 different SKUs at any one time, or different ones at the different ciders on the market. And if I get the opportunity, I'll have them taste all of them, just so that they can see the variety that can be made from an apple rather than just, you know, your vanilla flavored mm-hmm. standardized mm-hmm. variety. Mm-hmm. But no, there's a lot of evangelism that has to go on, I'm afraid.
Right. Now, would you consider yourself a orchard-based cidery?
No. From the outset, one of the rules that my wife laid down was, we're not planting apple trees. And she grew up with a wine-growing family, a small wine-growing family. But she said the level of stress, certainly in the springtime when they don't know whether there's going to be a late frost or whether there's going to be a hailstorm or whatever, she said, I don't want that hassle again. So she said, no, leave that headache to other people. So we do. So no, we would buy all of our apples in. We don't grow our own apples. Certainly not at the moment. That might be a plan further down the road to
Are
plant.
There Irish...
Oh, yes.
From Ireland?
Oh, from Bittersweet. Bittersweet, I'd say we probably have a surfeit of apples in the Republic, whereas the eating apples are far more challenging. I mean, Ireland already imports 90% of its eating apples anyway. So as we grow, it's more and more difficult to find apples from the Republic of Ireland. But that's what we endeavour and aim to do, always prioritise those. And from a Bittersweet perspective, they're only Irish ever.
So would you say that you have a base cider and then you're going from there? Do you have any single varietal or single variety ciders?
I guess we have what I would call classic ciders, which are crown cap, 500ml, 330ml bottles. Mm-hmm. And we would have I would have maybe 3 or 4 base ciders, which I would use mm-hmm. to blend to get those mm-hmm. different classic ciders. And then I would have single varieties. Certainly the specialist varieties, I would have single varieties where I'd go with those, because I'm trying to achieve specific goals. So, for example, one I was talking with, and I will work with wine analogs, because what I try to do is also, I believe a good cider is like a wine. And we'll be bringing out, for example, a chapitalized Elstar white apple wine this spring. And you know, most individuals who will taste it will not believe it's a cider. They will think it's a wine. So in those varieties,
are you calling it a wine, though?
I'm calling it apple wine.
An apple wine.
Yeah.
So then it isn't a cider. So I'm a little confused.
Well,
in using chapitalization, which, just so the listeners know, that's where you're adding sugar pre-ferment.
Yes. Well, during fermentation.
Yeah, fermentation, yeah.
Yes. Well, I mean, you're doing that for a number of things. Obviously, to change the certain characteristics of the cider, to increase its longevity as well, because one of the problems, and I'm doing this with not doing it with a high tannin variety, I'm doing it with a Elstar, which is a fantastic apple. It gives beautiful aromatics. But if you leave it at its, say, 7% ABV, it loses its luster very quickly. And actually, the alcohol is a protecting element, if you like. And it is a cider, but I'm calling it a wine because if I call it a cider and try and sell it at the price that it should be sold at, it will not sell. So what I want to do is trying to get people to start understanding that you can sit down and have some smoked salmon with a glass of white apple wine, just like you might have a glass of Sancerre with it. And that's the sort of specialty. And then I'd be using, as you asked, I'd be using the single varieties. I'd be going really trying to hone down particular characteristics and enhance those as we go through the fermentation. That's my goal.
You're bringing it up to what ABV then?
About 11%.
11%.
Yep.
So that's what I would consider an apple wine. And I wouldn't consider it a cider.
Well, it all depends upon what your classification of a cider is.
Right.
In relation to the Irish revenue, it's definitely a cider, and that's the way they'll tax it.
Oh, so let's talk about that then. So how does that taxation work?
Well, the advantage is, so we're very heavily taxed in cider in Ireland. We would pay, if you're a microbrewer, you're paying maybe €40 per hectolitre in duty. Cider maker for a similar strength cider, would be paying €95 per hectolitre. However, if you then start going into the apple wine category, we will pay less than a standard wine because we're apples as opposed to wine.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, it'll still go up. I mean, that will still cost €300 per hectolitre.
Well, yeah.
Which is huge, you know.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. These are the difficulties. So is there like an association in Ireland for working with the government to educate them for your industry, the cider industry?
There is a small one. I sit on I'm the secretary of Cider Ireland, which is a small trade association, numbers 12 at the moment, might number 14. I know that pales into insignificance next to the CiderCon numbers, but for us, that's pretty much all of the producers in the Republic of Ireland who are non. We set two criteria. The product needs to be made in the Republic, and it needs to be underneath the what the government recognise as the microbrewer threshold, which is 3 million litres. Very few of us are doing anywhere near a million litres. We're very, very
small. We'll say that yet. Yeah.
Yes.
Right
yes,
now. I
yes.
mean, because, you know, it's all about cider
absolutely,
growing up,
absolutely,
for sure.
Absolutely.
So about 12 producers overall in Ireland.
Well, that's excluding Northern Ireland, so they would have another set as well.
Okay.
But they would either be tied into the UK Association of Cider, Cider Makers,
yeah.
or they may wish to be free agents. But though Cider Ireland, our job is primarily to represent the industry from the legislator's perspective, which is required because we've had some crazy legislation introduced in the last 12 months, so we need to try and get our small voices heard as much as possible.
Would it be naive of me to assume that the powers that be that you're dealing with don't really understand cider? Like, that they might understand more about beer than cider? Or
I would definitely, yes, absolutely, because the only people that they've known up until 10 years ago were the large Magnus producers, and the primary, or a lot of their primary ingredient comes from the Far East and South America, i.e. concentrate.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they look at us, they think, well, you're just the same, you're buying mm-hmm. loads of concentrate. You're going, well, no, actually, we're supporting farming jobs, we're buying our apples here, we're creating employment because we're grossly more inefficient than the big guys. So you need to cut us a bit of slack, but it's hard work dealing with government. There's a lot of inertia, but I'm sure you're aware of that.
Yeah, I am. I'm really glad to know that you're part of that. Do you call it an association?
Yep.
Association.
Cider Island is the Association of Independent Irish Cider Makers.
With the apples that you're sourcing, are they coming from small orchards, or how does that work? And because, I mean, there's only so many apples in Ireland, but is there that many trees still waiting to be picked and used? Is there an over-surplus of apples?
There is a surfeit of apples, primarily because 25, 30 years ago, Magnus went around and signed 25-year contracts with the farmers. Magnus then grew substantially. They acquired sites in the UK. They didn't use all the demand that they or the supply that they created in the Republic. So, yes, there is.
Are they threatened by development? The apples, the existing apples, like this over surplus of apples right now. Is there a concern that you might lose trees because...
Absolutely. No, I mean, that would be my number one concern, that we're going to see farmers grubbing trees out, which would be a real shame. But, you know, if we can, we'll do our best to absorb the excess. But, you know, the Irish cider market is 69 million litres per annum. I would say the craft sector maybe represents 3%. So we're tiny.
Tiny. But just to be in the land of hopefulness, which I, you know, consider Ciderville to be the eternal land of optimism, that is, you know, not unlike where the U.S. was in a just, you know, really in a drop of a bucket a while ago. So knowing that you do have really good trees, they're probably really old trees. The movement, what is the growth in the past for that? The association is probably pretty new, but have you seen any significant increase in, I don't know, taps out there for cider or restaurants using cider? Just in terms of like that global perspective of cider now that we're seeing happening, like there's a, you know, conference in the Netherlands and they're talking about gin and they're talking about cider. Who would have thought that? You know,
well, there are a few interesting domestic dynamics. So about 4 years ago, Heineken came into the Republic of Ireland market. Before that, Magnus had 85% of it, and the rest was basically imports from overseas, mm-hmm. Bottled imports from, you know, the Nordic countries and things like that. And then Heineken have very aggressively come into the market. The figures that have been quoted are in excess of 20 million invested. They've taken about 13 to 14% of the market. So between the industrial brands, there is some very aggressive marketing practices ongoing, which inevitably has an impact on us as smaller mm-hmm. producers. Mm-hmm. And in relation to taps, one of the things that I was actually explaining to Jeff Parrish of, I think he's Portland mm-hmm. cider company, was that the strategy that the large producers have pursued is basically trying to remove any knowledge of the bar staff understanding what's going on in the cool room. So if there's a problem in the cool room, they call Heineken or they call Diageo or they call CNC. And the biggest problem for a small producer like us is, well, we have to offer the same service because, you know, if there's a leaking fob or there's a leaking fitting or they haven't tapped the keg properly, you know, well, it's call the supplier. Right. Whereas 15, 20 years ago, the bar staff would have been able to go in, figure it out, sort the problem out, and it would all have been done. So the post-cost sale is very challenging. We would only have 20 customers maybe at any one time who are on draft, because not only do I have the cost of the line maintenance and so forth, I also pay 30 euros per month in gas charges to BOC. Mm. So before a pint is pulled in an on-trade premise, it costs me 47 euros a month. Mm. So it's very challenging on the tap side. Most of the craft product would be going out in bottle, most of it.
Most of the bottle, wow. In 2020, Irish makers are going to be celebrating CiderCon in Oakland, California. Will that benefit Irish makers in terms of promoting that and advertising that? You know, we're going to the U.S., or do you think Irish drinkers will be like,
I'm
curious about that.
Having seen what I've seen in the last week, I would have to say it's got to be a positive at a lot of different levels. Number one, they're going to walk away from here completely energized by the enthusiasm and the passion of the producers here and the people who are involved in the whole event. So I think that's a positive for the producers. In relation to, and I think the other thing they're going to take away is a lot of education, which will be invaluable. So that's really positive, beneficial for the image of the Irish cider makers. Mm-hmm. And I think it'll be absolutely invaluable for them, for us within the marketplace, for us, you know. It may sound a bit bizarre, but the Irish are very, A, focused on America, and B, always keen to see their produce being displayed and promoted overseas. Mm-hmm. So I think it will, and I'm counting on it. In fact, when I speak to Denise Murphy, who looks after this in Board Beer, it will be of great interest to them to participate and be active supporters mm-hmm. of that, which is great because I want to get as many of our members over here as mm-hmm. we can. I mean, you know, we go from very small artisanal up to slightly larger mm-hmm. and I'm hoping we'll get the funds together to get us all over here. So no, I think it'll be an extremely positive exercise.
Yeah, absolutely. And we have a lot of Irish heritage, you know, in this country, rich heritage here and affinity to Ireland in that way. And many cider fans, cider enthusiasts would love to see Irish products coming into the U.S. And I've having the podcast and been approached, you know, Rhea, where can I get that? You know, where are the Irish products?
I think one of our members is over here, Longville House,
yes, yeah.
O'Callaghan's. It comes under the O'Callaghan's cider mm-hmm. brand. Craigie's was here in the past. I think what you've got to get right coming into the US market is, I mean, it's extremely complex anyway. You've got the three-tier system.
Yeah.
You have mega wholesalers who require a great deal of support.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got to get the price point right as well.
Right.
And you've got all of those three things that you need to get right. And it needs to be of an adequate scale to justify the investment to do all of those
yes,
things.
Of course.
So unfortunately, I would say there's only one Cider Island member who currently has a cider for sale mm-hmm. in the States.
Yeah.
But it's something that I am perpetually looking to mm-hmm. achieve. And I would say most of my fellow members would be the same, because we have so many American visitors every year. And certainly through the summer months, we would get emails, two or three emails a day, saying, when can I get this in the States? When mm-hmm. can I get this in the
right,
States?
Right.
So it's certainly high up on the priority list, but it's a big challenge. And if we could find a way to crack it, and I think I've identified a route, but it probably
yeah.
needs to be worked through a bit further before I succeed in doing that. And particularly the things that's challenging is, you know, each state has a different set of rules. It's almost like a different country,
mm-hmm.
really. Once you've got it through the importer, it's a different country.
So for cider fans out there, cider enthusiasts listening, which is really all of us, I think the key thing is to keep on going to the stores that you buy your product and say, you know, do you have any Irish cider? Do you have any Irish cider? In fact,
Irish craft cider.
Irish craft cider. Thank you for that clarification.
Because I'm sure they can turn around and point to one.
Do you use that as a clarification?
Those clothes have been robbed by bigger boys, but it's certainly, I suppose, still the fallback phrase to try and differentiate for somebody.
Yeah, Irish craft cider. And I guess the flip side of it is that what more beautiful place to visit in the world than going to Ireland and drinking cider right on the site? So that's, someone who does totally cider tours around the world, there's nothing better than bringing people right to the location, meeting the maker, drinking the cider on the land that was made, smelling the terroir in the earth, maybe tasting a little earth, you know, as you're drinking the cider, a good reason to visit Ireland.
Oh, yeah.
I'm really happy that you visited us here in Chicago.
Thank you. It was good to catch up after the last 2 years.
It's always awesome seeing you. And I've drank your cider, and I know it's a really fine craft cider brand.
Next year, we'll have all of the Irish ciders, so that should be easier for us to taste.
Here's to 2020.
Look forward to it.
CiderCon 2020, you have two opportunities to taste Irish cider. The first event is a ticketed event being moderated by Susanna Forbes. And Susanna is with Drink Britain. That is her Twitter handle. And Little Pomona, which is her cidery, along with her husband, James Forbes, based in Herefordshire in the UK. She'll be moderating that panel, which will have Daniel Emerson of Stonewall Cider, Mark Jenskin of The Cider Mill, Liam McDonald of Legacy Irish Cider, and Davey Uprich of Tempted Cider. These four cider makers are coming all the way from Ireland to taste cider with you. And if you don't get into that ticket event, well, no worries, because they'll be closing out CiderCon on Friday at the Grand Ballroom Tasting, where we'll all be raising a glass. You'll find links to these makers and Cider Ireland at the show notes for this year, episode 210, Cider Ireland with Stonewall Cider. Thanks for listening. This is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
Cider, we like ponds, we love orchards and having fun. There is a reason,
there is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh yes there is,
there is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh yes there is,
there is a reason why we drink it like this.
Oh yes there is a reason. We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet. We like cider, we like palms, we like orchards, having some fun.
There is a reason.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason. We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Oh yeah.
We like cider.
Oh yes, we do.
We like palms.
Oh yes, we do.
We love orchards, having some fun. There is a reason. There is a reason why we do it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum. Ba-da-da-dum.
We like walking down the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Oh yeah.
We like cider.
Ba-da-da-dum.
We like palms.
Oh yes, we do.
We like orchards, having some fun.
Yeehaw!